Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this.
How easy is getting unlimited data outside the U.S. with T-Mobile? Just one step. Turn on your phone. Because with T-Mobile, unlimited global data in over 100 countries is automatically included in your plan at no extra charge. Sounds simple? It is simple. It's the Simple Choice for Business plan, only at T-Mobile.
Qualifying service and capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobytes per second. No tethering. See T-Mobile.com for full feature terms and included destinations.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
The social media site that toyed with your emotions. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Gina Cervetti. Welcome into Monday, June 30th, last day of the month. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Facebook is under fire for conducting experiments with hundreds of thousands of news feeds without the knowledge of users. Find out what researchers wanted with those results.
President Obama wants more than $2 billion to manage the migrant crisis in Texas, where there are tens of thousands of unaccompanied children.
North Korea says it will charge two Americans with unspecified crimes after entering the country while on separate tours in April.
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton facing heat over the massive fees she's receiving from colleges for her speeches.
Can't these private donors just give the money to the school for student purposes? Why does it have to go into the pockets of Hillary Clinton or the Family Foundation? And then Republicans are having a lot of fun with this, too, saying she's just getting scads of money to line her pockets, and that it raises questions about whether she really is in touch with the struggles of everyday American.
Wall Street Journal reporter Peter Nicholas on critics of Mrs. Clinton's windfall for speeches. She's here in about 10 minutes. Bet this will make you feel used and abused. Facebook, with all the information it has about you, thinks that makes you their guinea pig, with the feeling that the social network site can do experiments on you without your permission. Here's the Wall Street Journal This Morning's Jeff Bellinger.
There is outrage over news that Facebook conducted a massive psychological experiment on nearly 700,000 unwitting users 2 years ago to determine whether it could alter the emotional state of its users and prompt them to post either more positive or negative content. The site's data scientists, for 1 week, set up the site to automatically omit content that contained words associated with either positive or negative emotions from central news feeds of certain users. Some people now say Facebook toyed with its users' emotions and uses members as guinea pigs. Gordon?
Thanks, Jeff. The impetus for the study, by the way, was this age-old complaint of some Facebook users that going on Facebook and seeing all the great and wonderful things other people are doing makes some people feel bad about their own lives. Some of the research has indicated that's not really the case. The controversy over the project highlights the delicate line in the social media industry between the privacy of users and the ambitions of the corporations that control their data, right? You put that information on there at your own risk. There's a poll question on today's website. Are you angry that Facebook secretly toyed with users' emotions? You can vote and see results on WSJThisMorning.com. North Korea says it will charge two Americans it detained in April with unspecified crimes, potentially paving the way for their eventual release. North Korean state media said U.S. tourists Matthew Miller, who's 24, and Jeffrey Fowle, who's 56, have been investigated for, quote, perpetrating hostile acts after entering the country while on separate tours back in the spring. We take you now to Seoul, South Korea, where Wall Street Journal reporter Jonathan Chang is tracking the story. Jonathan, what do we know at this point?
Well, basically what we know is that North Korea has, to our knowledge, three U.S. citizens in its custody. Two of them are tourists. Two of them were picked up in the last couple of months, and we haven't found out anything about their fate, and we're about to find out more. First, we have Matthew Miller. He's 24 years old. He came to North Korea on a tour in April. According to state media, and this was confirmed by his tour agency, which is run out of New Jersey, he ripped up his visa upon arriving in Pyongyang, and according to state media, he claimed that he wanted asylum in the country, but North Korea wasn't happy about that. I think it had something to do with disorderly conduct. But we'll find out more, perhaps, when they are tried. The second man is Jeffrey Fowle, who is from southwestern Ohio. He's municipal street repair guy. He ended up in North Korea on a tour, a group tour, and from one report, he left behind a Bible, perhaps, in his hotel room. We haven't been able to confirm that independently, but if that's true, it would certainly be consistent with some of the other U.S. citizens that have run afoul of North Korea.
What do you think is North Korea trying to do here?
Well, North Korea doesn't make two bones about its laws. It doesn't like Christianity. It certainly doesn't like people who come to the country and try to proselytize. And if that was the case with Jeffrey Fowle, then that would be a pretty straightforward reason for it. It's more complicated in the case of Matthew Miller. His tour agency says that he was on a private tour, meaning he was just him solo. He wasn't with any foreign tour guides, as is the case with most tourists who go to North Korea. He would have been handled just by local North Korean tour guides. And the tour agency says simply that they can't try and guess what his state of mind may have been. But if indeed it's true that he was trying to seek asylum, who knows? Perhaps he doesn't want to come back at all.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Jonathan Chang. He's with us live this morning from Seoul, South Korea. What are the odds of release for these guys, Jonathan?
Well, looking back just over the last few months, we have two good examples of foreign Western tourists who went to North Korea, ran into some trouble. In both cases, the men were elderly, and in both cases, they were forced to give confessions, basically saying that they had done something wrong, apologized, and promised basically to never come back. And in both of those cases, they were let free. Now, there is one American citizen, Kenneth Bay, who has been in custody for more than a year. It's actually coming on 2 years now, but in his case, it appears to be more serious. He came in and out of the country many times. He was a missionary as well, and that may have gotten him in deeper trouble. But it looks like in the case of both Matthew Miller and Jeffrey Fowle that these guys weren't coming in and out of North Korea. It may have been a one-off, and in that case, it would seem to fit the pattern of them confessing to alleged crimes and then being granted the freedom to go. But we'll have to see.
Strikes me as risky to jump on one of these tours in North Korea. Does the U.S. actually advise against it, or what's the policy?
Well, the State Department has warnings for many countries, North Korea among them. And after Jeffrey Fowle's arrest, they actually raised it up a notch and made their language more serious as well. It made it clear that even if you're on a group tour, as Jeffrey Fowle was, it doesn't give you any sort of immunity at all. And while the State Department can't ban Americans from traveling there, it certainly advises against it. But of course, as you say, it is a risky proposition, but I think that's part of the allure for a lot of people who want to go to places that are out there, exotic, and perhaps a little dangerous as well.
Thanks, Jonathan. Wall Street Journal reporter Jonathan Chang with us from Seoul, South Korea. It is 14 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Remember, you can follow the program on Twitter, Facebook, and now tune in. Join the tens of thousands already following us on the new TuneIn app, also at TuneIn.com. Coming up next, what Hillary Clinton gets for a speech these days. Good Monday morning. Thanks for being with us. Hillary Clinton makes more money with one speech than most Americans make over several years. She picked up $300,000 for a speech at UCLA in March. Now she's facing a backlash over her paid remarks, with students at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, calling on her to reject the $225,000 that the school is paying her family charity. Wall Street Journal reporter Peter Nicholas says the dispute at UNLV comes as Mrs. Clinton is making the case that she can empathize with struggling American families, whatever her net worth. He joins us on the T-Mobile hotline. Peter, what's being said at UNLV?
The school says in reply that this is private money, that she's going to be participating in a fundraiser for the school. She'll help with that. And the money she's being paid is not public money. These are private funds. So they insist that no tuition money, no school money, no public money is really involved.
When they say private funds, Peter, where does that money come from?
Well, that it would originate with a donor, a private donor, who is giving the money for this purpose. And that's what we're hearing from other schools that we've talked to. I spoke to Donna Shalala, who is the president of the University of Miami, who said, you know, Hillary Clinton spoke there earlier this year, and what Shalala did was get a private donor who likes the school to make a contribution to cover her fee. Hillary Clinton gave a speech in March at UCLA. We report that she received $300,000 for that, and that money, the school says, also came from private donations. So that's the argument that the schools are making to insist that there's really no public money involved, but it doesn't seem to appease the critics here.
So the students don't care where the money came from? They want it allocated in a different way?
They would make the argument, okay, well, can't these private donors just give the money to the school for student purposes? Why does it have to go into the pockets of Hillary Clinton or the Family Foundation? So that's where the argument breaks down. And then Republicans are having a lot of fun with this too, saying, you know, she's just getting scads of money from to line her pockets, this is what they're saying, and that it raises questions about whether she really is in touch with the struggles of everyday Americans. She and her husband are now millionaires many times over. Can they really relate to the struggles of everyday voters?
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Peter Nicholas. Why does somebody like Hillary Clinton charge so much for speaking engagements? Would the fallout be different if she capped her fee at, say, $50,000?
I think you're asking the right question. And what I suspect may well happen here is that as we go forward, as the campaign approaches and Hillary Clinton comes closer to making a decision or with all in all likelihood announcing she's going to run for candidate, that she may scale back these appearances. She may do less of them. She may do more pro bono speeches. This has become a political issue for her, and it's one she and her family are going to have to deal with. I suspect that there's going to be less of this kind of thing.
Thanks, Peter. Wall Street Journal reporter Peter Nicholas. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. The Supreme Court today is expected to rule on whether owners of for-profit enterprises have the right on religious grounds to opt out of providing contraception coverage and employee health insurance. Justices are also expected to rule in a case challenging the ability of public sector unions to collect fees from non-union workers. President Barack Obama today is expected to nominate former Procter & Gamble executive Robert McDonald to head the troubled VA. If confirmed, the 61-year-old would succeed Eric Shinseki, who resigned last month. McDonald graduated near the top of his West Point class. Stock futures this morning are narrowly mixed ahead of a holiday-shortened trading week, but we do have a number of economic reports to watch for, including the June jobs numbers. Comerica's Robert Dye tells us what he expects.
We've been running fairly warm on the employment side here with some pretty good numbers. My expectation is about 210,000 for the month of June, and that brings the unemployment rate down to 6.2%.
North Korea says it will charge two Americans, a 24-year-old and a 56-year-old, with unspecified crimes. Matthew Miller and Jeffrey Fowle reportedly entered the country on separate tours in April. Japanese news said that Fowle was detained because of a Bible left in his hotel room. No reports of crashes or injuries, but federal regulators are probing complaints that the design of the Nissan Versa may trap a driver's foot, causing unwanted acceleration. This probe covers about 360,000 late model Nissan Versa cars. In golf, Justin Rose wins the Quicken Loans National at Congressional in Bethesda. At Wimbledon, defending champ Andy Murray, top seed Novak Djokovic, and Maria Sharapova all have separate matches today, but five-time winner Serena Williams was ousted. And here's another case of apparent tweet regret. KLM, the Dutch airline, is apologizing after a PR blunder that angered Mexican soccer fans. After the Netherlands team beat Mexico, the airline tweeted, "Adios, amigos." Well, complaints quickly lit up social media, and the post was removed about a half hour later.
Ouch.
You can't really unring those Twitter bells, can you, Gordon?
No, that's true. That's true.
Kind of hard in the internet age, but they apologized.
It's okay for the fans to say that and post those signs, as many did, however.
In the corporate
airline,
world.
It's a little bit different, mm-hmm. Right? And as our colleague Scott McCartney likes to say, the airlines are really one of the only industries that abuses its customers. Another example here offered by KLM. 23 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Coming up next, the Midway Report for stocks in 2014.
Hi, I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business called Podlexing, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. With so many job boards out there, how can you know which one will produce the best talent? Realistically, to fill the position fast and with the perfect candidate, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can do it with a single click with ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com lets you post to more than 40 job sites at once. ZipRecruiter.com also posts your job on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Just post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You can screen applicants, rate them, and hire the right people fast. Try ZipRecruiter free right now and find out why it's been used by over 100,000 businesses. And right now, listeners of this program can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Glad you're with us. Good Monday morning. As of this morning, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has climbed 1.7% for the year. Wall Street Journal reporter Greg Zuckerman says the year's first half can be summed up succinctly: unpredictable markets producing impressive gains. Greg, which companies are doing best?
So utilities and the energy stocks have done the best. Utilities up about 13 or 14%. Part of that is because they've got these steady dividends, and when bonds do well and their prices go up, bond yields go lower, and the utility dividends look that much more attractive. But also, people were a little bit nervous and defensive in the first part of the year, and they liked utilities. And energy is one of the only few booming areas of the economy, so those stocks have done quite well.
You started to mention bonds here, Greg. What did we see with them in the first half of the year?
They may be the biggest surprise because everyone expected bonds to have problems. The Fed is doing less, but buying fewer bonds. Eventually, they're going to raise rates. It could take a few years, but eventually they're going to have to. And it's just that we came into the year with bond yields so low, around 3%, but they got even lower. So now they're around 2.5%. In other words, the bond prices went up and bond yields went down, and all kinds of big investors were surprised and lost money on that bet, but it helped the whole stock market. When bond yields, you can only get 2.5% on a 10-year treasury, it encourages investors to buy stocks.
How did the economy as a whole look in the first half?
It was a tale of two halves, two quarters. So the first part, the first quarter, was really weak, down 2.9% in the end. But the second quarter, we don't know the full data yet, but we think that'll be up around 3%. Not remarkable growth, but it's getting us back to where we want to go. And there is some suggestion that things could slowly improve the rest of this year.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Greg Zuckerman. Let's take a look through the rest of this year. We think the economy is going to get slightly better. What is that going to mean for Wall Street and for bonds?
Well, it means you want to start worrying a little bit about inflation. So there's a debate going on right now as to how much concern one should have. There's a strong view that I subscribe to that you don't really get much inflation until you get wage gains. And we're not really seeing those yet, but we're seeing a little bit of that. And if you get higher inflation, we really haven't had to worry about that for a long time. So, you know, and that's one of the reasons why gold has actually done pretty well so far this year.
Are there other assets that folks should be focusing on as we start to think about inflation heading higher?
Well, stocks actually do pretty well in higher inflation times, too. But we're not really at the point yet where we have to worry about much higher inflation. Just overall, stock prices right now are a tad expensive. So you don't want to be throwing everything into the stock market. But given where interest rates are, they're not bad. The prices aren't too expensive.
Thanks, Greg. Wall Street Journal reporter Greg Zuckerman. 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Traveling overseas for business comes with a checklist of things to worry about. But with T-Mobile, you can take getting international data off that list. Because with the Simple Choice for Business plan, unlimited data in over 100 countries is automatically included at no extra charge. Only at T-Mobile.
Qualifying service and capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobytes per second. No tethering. See T-Mobile.com for full feature terms and included destinations.
Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates and an intuitive drag-and-drop website builder, you can get your business online today. No coding needed. Start now at Wix.com. That's Wix.com. Thanks for being with us on this Monday, June 30th. It's the eve of July, believe it or not. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. And coming up this half hour, the Facebook experiment with your data without your knowledge. Also, President Obama addresses the migrant crisis in Texas. And the politician who says his opponent is dead with a body double in his place. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, it is a time of mixed emotions at the World Cup for Colombia. For one, the team has reached the quarterfinals after winning on Saturday, filled stadiums in Brazil with thousands of fans, and is boasting the leading goal scorer of the tournament, James Rodriguez. However, the 2014 World Cup also marks the 20th anniversary of the murder of Andres Escobar, who scored an own goal against the U.S. in a game in 1994 in Los Angeles. Colombia lost that game and went home early. 2 weeks later, in his native Medellin, Escobar was shot dead outside a bar, possibly in retribution for the own goal. We take you now to Bogota, Colombia, and Wall Street Journal reporter Dan Malinsky. Dan, give us the history.
20 years ago, Colombia had its last great soccer team. I mean, in the 1994 World Cup, hopes were really high for Colombia to do well. The Brazilian soccer star Pelé, he had predicted that Colombia could actually win the whole tournament in 1994. This was when the World Cup was played in Los Angeles. And so hopes were high. They went to Los Angeles. Everything seemed great. And in the first round, they first lost to Romania. And then during the second game against the USA, this guy, Andres Escobar, who was much loved here in Colombia. He was the captain of the team, good-looking guy, a very kind of honest guy, very upstanding citizen, always helped children and stuff like that. He was, you'd see him a lot in television helping children with their schoolwork and stuff like that, poor children. Well, he accidentally scored a goal for his own team during the USA match. There was a pass and it was deflected. He was trying to kick it out of reach of the goalie, but instead he kicked it right into his own goal. So after that event, the Colombia lost, fell out of the tournament. They didn't advance, and they went back to Colombia, and sure enough, he tried to forget it. He was obviously very depressed, and the whole country was depressed. But he went out for drinks one night just a few days after the game, after he got back to Colombia, and he was shot and killed coming out of a bar.
Was he shot because of the own goal, or was it a wrong place, wrong time situation?
A lot of people say that it was basically payback for him losing, and that it was drug dealers who were upset maybe that they lost a big bet that they had bet on Colombia in the World Cup, and so they were blaming him. Whatever the case, it left a huge tragic mark on Colombia and kind of helped foster this image that lives till today of Colombia as a land of drugs and violence. It's an image that Colombians are desperate to erase and show that the country is much more than that. And so that's why now that the Colombian soccer team is doing great again, because they really went 20 years not doing so well and not even qualifying for World Cups since 1998. And so people are remembering again Andres Escobar because it's the 20th anniversary of his death on July 2nd. And so that's kind of why he's in the minds of so many Colombians.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Dan Malinsky in Bogota, Colombia. You think this incident is what led to the Colombian team struggling for so long?
You know, it wasn't so much that. It did, as you say, affect greatly Colombia not doing well for 20 years, but it's for a very interesting reason. The Colombian drug cartels basically controlled the entire soccer industry here in those years leading up to 1994, and that's why they had a great team. People readily accept that it was drug money that was creating these great players that could pay for these great players. And so the drug money, these drug cartels, each famous drug dealer like Pablo Escobar, for example, or Rodriguez Gacha, nicknamed El Mexicano. They each had their own team. Escobar, Pablo Escobar, who, by the way, has no relationship to Andres Escobar, he had the teams in Medellin, while Rodriguez Gacha had the teams in Bogota, the team in Bogota, Millonarios. And so they had these great teams that created a good national team. But the entire foundation, as people have said, the entire foundation was built on in a defective way because it was built on illegal drug money. When Andres Escobar was killed, the government basically said, enough is enough. We got to get this illegal money out of soccer or it's just going to poison soccer forever.
Were they able to get the drug money out of the game?
They did. They cleaned it up. They got the drug money out of soccer, but sure enough, you know, Colombia is not a big country, relatively, and it's not a rich country. And so when it didn't have the drug money in the soccer industry, the players just, you know, they didn't do so well. And the teams nearly went bankrupt over the past 10, 20 years. Fans stopped going to the games because the players weren't any good. There was no money flowing back and forth. Nobody could buy tickets. And so that's kind of why it went this way. Now things are changing. Colombia's economy is improving. More people are trying to get out to go to the soccer games to support their country and their teams. And there's more of a middle class that can afford tickets, that can then afford that can then help the teams to afford better players. And so now you're seeing this resurgence, and it's beautiful in many ways here in Colombia. And that is why we're seeing a good team once again.
Good for them. And their promising young star, James Rodriguez, who has scored 5 goals. Now, I remember that Escobar incident in 1994. I was a high school soccer coach at the time. And for the period before Andres was shot, it sort of became a joke, like his name was a verb. You know, don't Escobar the ball, meaning don't kick it into your own goal. And then when he was killed, that just changed everything. Boy, it just took the fun right out of it. 19 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Coming up next, the new technology realtors are using to sell properties. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a technology update, and it's brought to you by T-Mobile. Unleash the potential of your business with T-Mobile, the company that's changing the way business does wireless. Realtors in New York City are using a new technology to help sell properties to their high-end or overseas clients. Drones. Among those trying it out as of late, Pej Barlavi, CEO of Barlavi Realty in New York. Pej, how are they used?
Mainly it's being used for aerial photography, taking pictures of the sites as the development takes off from the ground up. A lot of times our overseas buyers want to know what the view is going to be, if you're going to be on the 30th or 40th floor or the 10th floor. And if these projects aren't off the ground yet, trying to sell them without having the view is a lot harder. So they're always asking, what's the view going to be? Which way are the windows facing? So we use these aerial cameras to give a good perspective of what the site is going to look like.
All right, so how many, say, might you use on a single property site? Or how many visits might you make, say, with your drone?
Before the drone, it was always we had to wait until the project was off the ground. The skeleton was there, so you can go, like, on every floor, take a picture of every angle of every floor, and send it to the prospective buyer. Now we just use usually one drone, leave it on the site, and, you know, we'll every few meters or every few feet, we'll take a panoramic picture of that, and that'll be like the first floor, and then we'll go up to the second floor, third floor, and so on. So we have a good perspective of where you're standing is the view you're going
to
get.
Do you have to be on site to operate it like a model airplane, for example, or do you have some other remote access?
No, you have to be, because here in New York City, if the model helicopter or plane or drone gets off veer, you know, you got so many people walking on the sidewalks throughout the day, it becomes a very big hazard. That's why the FAA, not only is it a privacy issue, but it is, especially in Manhattan, an issue of safety as well, because if this thing falls, runs out of gas, radios misconnect, and it falls on somebody, it's a huge problem. So you got to have somebody trying to control this on site.
We're speaking with Pej Barlavi, CEO of Barlavi Realty. We're talking about the use of drones in real estate these days. Does it offer pictures in real time or video in real time? What do? You take it back to the office, download the stuff, and then ship the pictures or video out to clients?
Yeah, basically, we take it, we break it down by floor or by by height, estimate where each floor is, break it down, put north, east, west views, and send it out to any of the clients that are requesting it. Usually the developer does this before we do. The developer uses the technology before we do. If not, we bring a much smaller drone system to do this.
So is this mostly New York City, L.A., the big cities, or is it happening elsewhere too?
It seems to be catching on elsewhere. Again, you know, it's really an FAA issue. Trying to work around it has been very difficult. Out in the Hamptons, it's a lot easier. Years ago, we used to rent a helicopter, get on Google Maps, find out where the property is, rent a helicopter for an hour or two, take the client on and show them, give them a tour of the Hamptons and what these big sprawling properties are and, you know, what they look like, which way they face. But now you can save a lot of money by just doing a quick drone circle of the property. So it works really well, much better out in the Hamptons and in the Midwest, California, Los Angeles type thing than it does in Manhattan is an issue. We've had a really hard time doing drone here in the city.
Thanks, Pej. That is Pej Barlavi, CEO of Barlavi Realty in New York. 13 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Coming up next, Gina Cervetti with our top stories. Thanks for spending time with us on this Monday. There's a poll question on our website today. It's, are you angry that Facebook secretly toyed with users' emotions? You can vote and see results at WSJThisMorning.com. 9 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back with America's First News.
Good morning. A new law takes effect in Georgia tomorrow, expanding gun permit holders' right to carry where people congregate. Georgia's Safe Carry Protection Act allows licensed gun owners to bring weapons to bars and houses of worship unless forbidden by proprietors. In South Africa, Oscar Pistorius back in court today, facing the final weeks now of his trial in the murder of his girlfriend. A month-long psychiatric evaluation found that the athlete did not suffer from mental illness that would have influenced his actions in the killing. We have a shortened trading week here because of the holiday, but we will watch for several economic reports, starting today with pending home sales.
We did see some April numbers ticking up a little bit. My expectation is we continue to see a little bit of firming on the home sales front as traditional buyers come back into the market.
Robert Dye is with Comerica. In the meantime, U.S. stock futures flat to lower. Asian markets were mixed today. President Barack Obama is seeking more than $2 billion to deal with the surge in Central American children illegally crossing the U.S. border. The White House also says the president wants new authority to return them home more quickly. A cruise ship is back on its way after returning to Seattle because of a boiler room fire. Holland America says no one was injured and the Coast Guard cleared the vessel to continue its Alaskan journey. Passengers will miss one scheduled stop, but be given a $250 per room credit. U.S. authorities today expected to announce that French bank BNP Paribas will pay almost $9 billion in penalties and plead guilty to trying to hide some $30 billion in transactions with sanctioned countries. This is a landmark deal here. Your Ford F-150 pickup truck ranks at the top in terms of American-made. Cars.com looks at percentage of domestic parts used, final assembly location, and overall sales. In fact, just 10 cars made the American-made index, and that is the fewest in the 9 years that this index has been put out.
All right. So this speaks to a lot of these vehicles undergoing some manufacturing in places like Mexico, obviously Japan.
Well, you know what? One of the interesting things about this, too, Gordon, is that out of the 10, only the Ford F-150, which we mentioned, along with the Chevy Corvette and the Dodge SRT Viper,
they
made the list. And those were the only ones from the companies that we think of as the big three U.S. automakers,
right? Okay. Yeah.
Everybody else on the list was Toyota, Honda.
Yep.
Because a lot of those cars are made here now, too.
All right. Thank you, Gina. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
A smartphone is a pretty harmless device, unless you take one outside the U.S. without T-Mobile. Binging quietly on emails and GPS coordinates, it might run your data tab into the thousands. Smart business travelers choose T-Mobile's Simple Choice for Business plan with unlimited global data in over 100 countries at no extra charge.
Qualifying service and capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobytes per second. No tethering. See T-Mobile.com for full feature terms and included destinations.
Here's a way to keep your name alive after getting trounced in an election. An Oklahoma politician who lost a primary last Tuesday plans to contest the results because he claims his rival is actually dead and is being represented by a body double. UPI has the story about District 3 congressional candidate Tim Murray, who posted a letter on his website that reads, quote, "It is widely known Congressman Frank D. Lucas is no longer alive and has been displayed by a lookalike." Murray alleges that Lucas was killed during a 2011 trip to Ukraine when he was hanged by the neck in front of witnesses. Mr. Murray, who received just 5% of the vote, promises he'll never use a lookalike. Congressman Lucas, by the way, denies that he was killed and reported that he's never been to Ukraine. Mr. Lucas says, "Many things have been said about me in the course of all my campaigns. This is the first time I've ever been accused of being a body double or a robot." For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning.